I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jack Charles was once described on Australian television as one of the most respected and enduring actors in the country. He brings his show Jack Charles versus the Crown to Vancouver's Push Festival, the 21st through to the 23rd of January. He'll take it to Calgary later in the month, and he's in Ottawa now, just about to begin a run of the show at the National Arts Centre there. He joins me now, and I'll get him to tell us about this show, where he'll tell audiences about his life and career. He's got some great stories, and they're in this unique piece that explores the themes throughout Jack's life: abuse, the Aboriginal experience in Australia, a career in theater and the screen, to drug use, crime, and faith. The show has toured throughout Australia and has gone on to England and Ireland. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets for the performances. The show plays at the Fay and Milton Wong Experimental Theater at SFU's Gold Core Center for the Arts on January 20th, 2016. The documentary on Jack's life, Bastardy, will be screened. That'll be a free showing. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Ottawa today, Jack Charles. Mr. Charles, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here. Good to speak to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. Have you worked in Canada before?
No, but I was here just recently, a couple of months ago, in Vancouver to do a 20-minute version of the show at the World Arts Alliance Four Nations Conference there. And but we'd already sold the show to Canada. It was a great experience to come over and experience Vancouver. You know, they say it's one of the most livable cities, and it's very similar to Melbourne's weather, it seemed. But I don't know about midwinter.
Yeah, well, it's
I've never experienced this cold snow and etc. as like you've got here in Canada. It's exciting for me.
Yeah.
I'm pleased to experience being frozen, treading lightly over icy ground. This is something that I'm willing to accept in touring my show.
Yeah.
But it happens to be in Canada in midwinter. All well and good. I'm still going to run with it.
Yeah, it's a lot milder in Vancouver than it is in Ottawa today. So,
that's what I hear. Yeah, yes.
So
I hear Calgary is going to be even freezier or colder.
Yeah, there's a lot of snow there, so you'll have to get the the galoshes out or the snowshoes, if you will. The experiences that you recount in the show with regards to being Aboriginal in Australia, assimilation that you experienced there, I mean, these themes will resonate here, won't they?
Yes, they will. It was always a long-held dreaming of mine to actually perform Jack Charles versus the Crown here in Canada, because I knew that our story very much reflected mirror image almost the Canadian experience. I'm very pleased that I'm at long last here. It's taken a while, you know. It was, I suppose, when we look back on it, you know, it was proper and right, I suppose, to do it in England first. It's still called the mother country, from my personal point of view. You know, Australia is still a part of the royal family.
Yeah.
It is not independent. We still have, another country on our national flag, the Union Jack. You know, so, once that's gotten rid of, you know, I'll feel that Australia has come somewhat of age. Coming over to Canada was the most important. It was so important that I do Canada because I wanted to experience, an audience with Canadians and also the Inuits and the First Nations people witnessing my show, seeing perhaps portions of their own lives unfolding in the telling of my story.
So how does this piece unfold, Jack Charles versus the Crown? What happens in the course of the evening? Because I'm sure a lot of people listening to us will not know much about it, and we urge them to come down to the Push Festival when you're playing here later in the month. What might they expect?
You get the full sight and sound theatrical experience with Jack Charles versus the Crown. I've got three band members, and I've got a pottery wheel on stage, and I've got a wall where images are screened of bastardy, some parts of bastardy, but also parts of the newfound photos that I've discovered in the researching of Jack Charles versus the Crown to co-write it with my mate John Romerill. We dived into the archives of the Koori Heritage Trust, Koori meaning the Aboriginal around Victoria and the South Coast, and that they had the archives, and many of our families are listed. We can go right back to the early 1700s and look up our family connections to country, kinship, community, law, languages, and that. So I've got the full extent of my cultural heritage now, and so we put images of my great greats onto the big screen behind me, and there are some images that might turn away from some of the images screened on behind me, but that's from Bastardy, some of the images from Bastardy. But, that's par for the course, the highs and lows of my life. I've openly, in Bastardy, the documentary, it was a wonderful exercise. Bastardy took 8 years to make. Emil Corton Wilson had come out of, a young fellow had come out of RMIT School in Melbourne of television and et cetera. Yeah. And he plucked me off the streets. And he asked me, would I mind him following me around with his camera, telling my story, showing the world, indeed Australia, my story of an addicted, homeless person struggling to make ends meet, stealing, and yet at the same time off and on performing on the stage and on television and a couple of movies and etc. So he stuck back with me, and it took 8 years. Now, after Bastardy was shown, was premiered in Melbourne, and we had to have two premiere nights because I'm a well-known Melburnian. Uh-huh. Everybody in Melbourne knows of me. I was a busker for many years, busking to support my drug addiction, so music is an integral part of the show. And I've got the three band members. Bastardy was an exercise in showcasing how powerless I was against the pulling power of the powders at that time.
Yeah.
But once I saw Bastardy on the big screen for myself, and then answering the Q&A, the questions and that, I realised my potential as a public spokesperson.
Yeah.
That I could speak up for myself and for my community, and in particular about the assimilation policies and what led many of us Indigenous people into lives of crime. Failed adopted people in my time, failed fostered people, were sent into an institution, and many of us met up in there. Many of them were already living lives of crime, so it was very easy for a young, impressionable bloke like me at 17 to be led into a life of crime. But at the same time, I stuck fat with my glass beveling. I've become a qualified glass beveler, and I tried to get into the music industry from the age of 15. But once I left the foster people at 17, I found that I could, independently, living alone, on my own. Like, when you were shoved out of the institutions, there was no counselling in those days. Mm-hmm. One had to counsel oneself through life, and it was always, well, for me, it was the case of the blind leading the blind and failed at every turn in many cases. So I always ended up in prison. I wasn't a very good cat burglar, a failed cat burglar. 22 times incarcerated. I must have been a bad cat burglar, always busted. But I had this presence of mind, mate, that I would only ever rob the large wealthy mansions in my community, Melbourne. And the irony here struck me that once I got the full extent of my heritage, that the lands upon which those large mansions were built in and around Melbourne are on the lands of my mum, my mother, the Bunurong.
Uh-huh.
And that's the irony. I can lightly claim now that I was actually collecting rent from these large mansions, you know, without permission, of course. People were sleeping upstairs, and I had downstairs. I had the run of downstairs, but that was my life then.
Yeah.
I make an apology every night in my show. I apologize. A stolen child myself, I offer up a heartfelt apology to all those I've stolen from, all those I've disappointed. They are the lines in part of the play in my courtroom address.
Yeah.
Now, we called it Jack Charles versus the Crown, this show, because I had this weird notion that I could eventually one day front the High Court of Australia or the highest court in Melbourne and have my criminal record expunged, sealed for the required 99 years. I need to have my criminal record sealed because I have a passion to go back into prisons.
Hmm.
Spent a lot of prison time.
Yeah.
And I have this inherent obligation as an Aboriginal elder to go back into prisons, run my own kind of cognitive skills program. As the public spokesperson for a workshop that I've been trying to develop for the past nearly 10 years now, I had jumped off the methadone, off the smack, heroin in 2006, and just come out of jail, and it took two more years to finish off the documentary. But once that documentary came out into the public arena, I was instantly on a rise. My profile rose so sharply upwards and ever up onwards. And so I've been now taken, it's hard for an ex-crim like myself to be taken seriously. And so everything I've done in the theatre, in doing keynote addresses around the states, in being the public spokesperson for the Royal Commission, those of us that were abused by the Salvation Army officers in our institutions. It's been a wonderful journey. People now are taking me seriously. Now, especially now that I've just been nominated. Victoria has taken me that serious that they recently awarded me the Senior Victorian Australian of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big honour. And so I'm due very shortly on Australia Day to be, I'm nominated to be the Senior Australian of the Year. But I'll be over here touring Canada while that happens. But, my life's unfolded, and now I'm the definitive walking, talking role model. And in the performing arts,
yeah.
Also in my community,
yeah.
I work on a lot of people on the streets, in their flats, in their units, and that. Sometimes I have failures. You know, I've been trying to get people onto the methadone, and then on the other hand, getting other people off the methadone.
Yeah.
And I use with the Aboriginal people, I just say, use your indigenousness, your aboriginality, to take yourself more seriously. Because real black fellas shouldn't be shooting, shouldn't be injecting white powder in their veins.
Yeah.
And I claim also that once we start pushing that heroin and stuff, ice into our systems, we start abusing our culture. We'll rob our own kind. We'll forget about culture, kinship, community and law.
Yeah,
and you will always end up in jail. You know.
Well, so I've seen clips of the show, and I've seen interviews that you've done, and one of the themes throughout Jack Charles versus the Crown is this idea of forgiveness. And so these last number of years for you,
yes.
Looking back at your life and looking forward, how important was it for you to get to forgiveness and for people listening to us?
I couldn't have done it unless I had forgiven myself in prison.
Yeah.
In the first place. I worked on myself. I counseled myself. The drug and alcohol counseling obviously had failed me. So that was the other reason why I needed to go in and do some counseling of my own back. A man with a lived experience, the man beyond reproach. It's just so difficult to go back into Victorian prisons and share the journey because I've been a guest of Her Majesty's prisons in Victoria. And they're a little bit iffy about inviting me in or allowing me in.
Right.
So I just keep on pushing it. I won't wait around for people's permissions. I'll just keep pushing the bar. And everything I've done is done to generate an interest in the system to take me more seriously. Allow me, give me a run and that. But, allow me to enter prisons. Institutions start, as I like to say, relight the burning embers of many a black fella and a white fella's dreaming, lost dreaming, drowned out through grog, drugged up, iced up, and etc.
And then what's the lesson then for all of us in terms of endurance and survival? Because you have done both.
Yeah. Well, you have to take yourself seriously. You've got to be beyond reproach. You do have to forgive. You do have to understand those that are still struggling. You know, I love nothing better than working on somebody. You know, in my own inimitable style, I keep on them and that. You know, I keep at them to the point. Sometimes they get a little bit annoyed with me, but because they're related, many of them,
uh-huh.
You know, and many of the white people know what I'm on about, so they do respect me. But I just keep on pushing it, and that's the secret: is to forgive yourself and to understand the bigger picture here. That I had this paranoia in my tiny little trams and trains in my mind, in my brains, that the system has allowed the indigenous people to be continuously locked up, grogged up, iced up, drugged up. So that we can never have a sense of our worth, so that we can never ever claim our lands back again, to be taken seriously by the system.
You mentioned counseling yourself when you were in prison and out of prison. Does doing this show night after night, is that part of the counseling? Do you learn more?
It's a cathartic journey for me.
It is?
Because I know I'm informing and educating. People come up to us after the show, some of them crying, as I never knew, and people that knew me never knew of the struggles that I'd kept hidden away from them, especially other fellow actors and etc. Because sometimes when I didn't want to do any burglaries, I'd go to a theatre where I knew somebody was performing, and I'd cold bite off them some $50 or something backstage, cold bite, mm-hmm. ask for a quid. And they would give it to me. So knowing full well that probably they've saved me from going out doing a late night run of burglaries.
Yeah. And when you look back at this life and you understand everything that's happened, and now you are a role model for a lot of people, not just the audience, but the people that you counsel. Is that a burden at all for you?
Oh, no, it's an obligation. It's an inherent obligation that a bloke in my unique position has to respond to and undertake and accept totally. You know, the irony is here, I'm Jack Charles, my initials are JC, so I'm heartened by the fact that I perhaps could be the second coming. The second Jesus Christ in many people's minds. And that keeps me flowing. That keeps me energized. You might say I'm full of it, but you have to be full of it to do what I do, to put myself at risk working with those that have addicted. I've had many things stolen from me in my unit, but that's no never mind for me, you know. That it's part of the course when you're working with people that are struggling with their own lives and that, and they do take advantage of my goodwill, but I don't mind. I waggle a finger and I stamp a foot and I point the bone at it and I say the right words to them, you know, but I forgive. That's the point, and they know that, you know, that they can speak to me, they can tell me anything, and they know that I won't be over-judgmental upon their stories and their difficulties. I can understand them.
And for you now, Jack, how important is faith? You talked about being Aboriginal. I mean,
that's my faith. I was asked years ago on a religious program on the ABC, what is my religion? And, you know, I had this notion that, being abused by the Salvation Army, you know, at a very young age and that raped and etc., I became, you know, the public, the well-known public advocate and a voice for two of the Royal Commissions into the Salvation Army recently. So I'm a well-known person that doesn't mind exposing what happened to me in prison in the institution. And I didn't want to sue the Salvation Army, but the last time I was in jail, I was approached by a bunch of fellas who were in the Box Hill Boys Home with me. I'd totally forgotten these blokes, but they responded to me. They knew who I was because at the time that I was in Box Hill Boys Home, I was the only Aboriginal in that home, mm-hmm. right? So I was there under the assimilation policy. If other Aboriginal kids had been moved in with me, it would have been seen sooner as a failed social experiment. So these boys asked me, would I mind giving them my phone number when I got out? So this last laggan where these fellows met me, when I left, I had the key to my unit still, mm-hmm. my property. So this was the first time I was going to be leaving a prison, going straight to my own home. And normally, when I left prisons, all the other previous prison sentences, I'd always left going to no home. And so I would always go to the dealer as soon as I landed back in Melbourne, mm-hmm. and had the welcome home proffered whack of heroin and that. But this time around, I was on a roll. I was intentionally coming out to be, I was full of it and ready to go, pumped up, to be my community's Featherfoot Kadaicha man, because 2 years before I came into jail, I was already off the shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you mentioned you have a pottery wheel on stage. What happens to all the things that all the pieces of pottery that you make after?
Well, we like to leave it for the anything I make. We like to leave most of it behind, all of it behind, so the theatre can do with what they will with them. Every theatre that I've gone to, everything I've made in the course of touring there, sometimes it'll be about 20 or so pots.
Yeah.
And they'll take them to the local universities or colleges to get them fired, and they'll do whatever they will with them. I sign them, yeah. etc. But, yes, that's, you know, I don't, you know, it's a, in when I ran my pottery shops in jail, I called them Psycho Ceramica. Because you have to be a crackpot to be in the nick in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And I ran it with my pottery shop, Psycho Ceramica, with an iron fist. You weren't allowed, a lot of drugs in jail, you weren't allowed into Psycho Ceramica if you were Serapact or Rohypnol off your tits. Because, excuse me, you were like a bull in a china shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I even, you know, was in a position to bar even the prison officers from coming in and tampering with our pots. Psycho Ceramica, my pottery shops in prisons were a source of sanctuary in this chaotic world of prisons and that. And they were open 7 days a week, 8 7 to 8 of a night, especially the open camp prisons. But, I taught a lot of fellas, and I taught them a way of life, patience, and that you have to be patient to create some wonderful work, patience to wait until the kiln is cool enough to open. Now, in an environment in prison, people are very agitated, and they want things instantly. So it was very hard to contain them and that. But, you know, I could do this, you know, and I ran with it, and nobody ever, you know, said a nasty word about the pottery shop or me, you know. But it was a place of sanctuary. And, I'm proud that I've taught many fellows these fine arts of ceramica. I know some of them have gone on to be fine artists in their own right.
Yeah. Now, so Jack, you're known for your look. I mean, you described it on Australian television as a feral look, your hair, your beard. But what's unique about you and mesmerizing for me is this voice. Where did you learn to cultivate that? Was that elocution lessons, say, as a kid?
I had a teacher there who took me aside, quite often. There was a school in the home, SS State School 4151. And so I, being the only Aboriginal kid there, this teacher looked after me. I liked the geography lessons he gave me, but most of the time I was shoved out into the garden and to work in the garden. But this teacher, he taught me that 12 pennies made a dinar, a bob, a shilling. So he taught me how to handle money, but he also gave me elocution lessons.
Mm.
And I also did some music in the school too, music lessons. So I left there with this very well-spoken English. Coming into Aboriginal Melbourne at 17 was very difficult, really, because it may have been the crushed yellow velvet flares I might have been wearing, but I was a little bit offside with the rest of the community in Aboriginal Melbourne. And I did have the wrong name. My name is Charles. And my mother, in the 50s, was accused of murdering a certain person in a blackfella camp in Griffith, at the top end of New South Wales, in a blackfella camp. And I know the full story now, but in those days, an early Aboriginal, when I went into Fitzroy, Collingwood Fitzroy, I was treated with some suspicion and not fully accepted by the community because of this action by my mum. And years later, you know, when the Koori Heritage Trust was developed, you know, I get the information of the High Court of New South Wales clearing my mum of that murder and that.
Yeah.
And I know the full story. So I told the son of the murdered man that I do not like wearing the so-called sins of my mum. She was an agitator for what was right and what was wrong, and that, you know, to pulling up this fellow who was abusing the children and the women in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a meeting in the camp. This was in the early 50s.
Yeah.
And, you know, against the odds, these black fellows, my rallies up in the Wiradjuri country up in Griffith, had decided that capital punishment must be dealt to this man because of his behaviour towards the women and the children in the camp, and that my mum was at the helm of that, and that. So they decided this man had to go. A knife was given unto the person who was going to carry it out, and my mum went along with them, and along the irrigation ditch, the bloke's neck was severed with a knife, and his body chucked into the irrigation ditch. My mum was handed the knife, as the transcript reads, and was told to get rid of it. She didn't. She took that knife back to the blackfella camp. She washed it, put it through the fire, washed it again, dried it, and put it on the meat safe hanging on the tree just outside her hut. Knives and tomahawks in a blackfella camp in the 50s were valuable utensils. So she just wasn't going to throw it away. I mean, it cut up kangaroos and etc.
Uh-huh.
So for meat and that. So I've got the full story of that, And I'm healed now over that, you know, that incident, because I've been telling everybody in Aboriginal Melbourne this story, the truth. Truth will always out.
Yeah.
And that I feel very much more powerful telling that. But, you know, I'm still held in suspicion in Aboriginal Melbourne because I am a man beyond reproach now. And there's a lot of corruptness in our services, in our well-being centres and etc. And I'm the one waggling the finger and pointing the bone and stamping the foot at this behaviour. And, you know, so my point is that I need to develop the Nindabyre workshop in my own right to show, Case, to those corrupted organisations how it ought to be done. But, you know, is a crim like me, with somebody with my extensive criminal record, ever going to be in that position?
Yeah.
So the point was, I needed to come over to Canada, perhaps America. It's very hard to get into Canada, I mean America,
yeah,
with my criminal record, but it could work.
Yeah.
And I was going to, I had this wet dream that I could probably ask the Indians from the Hard Rock Cafe mob, who I heard were giving large donations to certain Indigenous organisations to set up certain programs and etc. and that. Well, I thought I'd take advantage of that. It's been, you know, taken me well over 10 years, you know. But here I am in Canada now. You know, it's, I'm not going to be asking for funding or anything like this because I believe now that once I am now awarded the Victorian Senior Australian of the Year, I can now go back to Melbourne. And I can be now taken seriously, and I reckon I can get funding to develop my pet project, the Nindabyre Workshop. You know, once I develop the Nindabyre Workshop, I'll force the issue about me returning to prisons.
Yeah.
Because I need to go back into prisons as a public spokesperson for the workshop.
Well, it's been, Jack, such a pleasure and honor to talk to you today. I wish you every success in all of your endeavors and beginning with this run here in Vancouver shortly and everything else.
Oh, it'll be a hoot, mate. I just can't wait to be unleashed of the Canadians in this wonderful theatre here, this fabulous theatre. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jack.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, all the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
The show is called Jack Charles versus the Queen. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets and information. Jack Charles joined me on the line from Ottawa. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plante.